Good morning, Dr. Ross. How are you today?
Good morning, Brent. I'm very well, thanks, mate. Lovely to speak to you.
All right, mate. I've got a couple of listener questions as always. Jana says, for Dr. Ross, I'm 73 and have been having, is it Prolia injections for my osteoporosis for 10 years? I have been reading that this drug, after long-term use, can cause pain in the thigh and is not recommended for use beyond 10 years. I'd love Dr. Ross's opinion on this drug, and should I continue using it? Thank you from Janice.
Yeah, look, I think that Prolia is the best pharmaceutical drug for osteoporosis, but I agree with what it says on the package insert. You probably shouldn't use it beyond about 7 years. I think after that, it's best to stop using it. This is my view, but I'm not an absolute expert in osteoporosis. So Janice should really be guided by her endocrinologist. But I would be stopping it after 7 years and then getting regular DEXA scans, which are the scans that assesses how the osteoporosis is going. So see what the scan's doing now. Probably take nothing for 2 years. But what I would be doing, and everyone should be doing this who has osteoporosis, and everyone should be doing this anyhow, is exercising 3 to 5 hours a week. Should be 2/3 cardio and 1/3 resistance training, because strong muscles promote strong bones. That's the first thing. Secondly, don't take oral calcium, because there's absolutely no evidence from any trials that swallowing oral calcium pills in the form of calcium carbonate, which is basically swallowing chalk, does anything for your bones at all. It doesn't prevent osteoporosis, nor does it prevent bone fracture. But what it does do in some cases is put calcium in your arteries. So the only source of calcium is organic calcium, which you get from dairy products, of course. So that's the next thing. The next thing is, and I'm sure Janice is too smart to do this, but don't have regular soft drink, because in soft drink, whether it's artificially sweetened or sugar sweetened, it has a thing called phosphoric acid. Some clever food companies call it food acid, that rip the calcium out of your bones. So you certainly don't do that. And then the things you can do that are positive for osteoporosis, apart from exercise, is take vitamin K2 in a dose of 180 micrograms daily and get your vitamin D levels sitting around 100, which typically you can do with two vitamin D capsules a day. There are 1,000 international units, two of those a day, but just monitor the vitamin D levels occasionally. And then in 2 years' time, have another DEXA scan. And if she's becoming more osteoporotic, there are other therapies for osteoporosis other than the Prolia. But I just don't think it's a good idea to keep on the one therapy for more than about 7 years.
There you go, Janice. Scott says, he's from Tweed Heads. He said, I'm addicted to caffeine. I have 10 cups or more every day. How can I detox? I have tried swapping to decaf, but it just wasn't the same, and I always turn back to full strength. Is there a supplement or a program available? What suggestions does Dr. Ross have to help me kick this caffeine addiction?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult question, and it's a very difficult problem when people are that addicted to coffee. Now, coffee in low doses is good for you. There's no doubt having a couple of cups a day does reduce your risk for gallstones, kidney stones, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, many common cancers, type 2 diabetes, depression, stroke, and heart failure. So there's a huge amount of benefits from having a couple of cups of coffee a day. But once you get to beyond 6, especially I think even beyond 3 a day, that's when the problems start. And the problems include things like increasing risk for osteoporosis that we've just been talking about. There's certainly, it heightens your feeling of anxiety. It can cause cardiac palpitations, so your heart can jump all over the place with this. And it also disrupts your sleeping pattern as well. People who drink that amount of coffee per day have all sorts of issues with it. Interestingly, there's been some studies to show that things like the naltrexone that people use for problems with addiction to other things may help. There are some other things like certain antidepressants. There's a drug called bupropion, which is more for people giving up cigarettes. But again, that may diminish the dependency on caffeine. And so even some CBD products, cannabis, medical cannabis products may help as well. But I really think Scott needs to seek some professional help with this rather than just sending an email. He needs to go and speak to his GP and probably get referred to some addiction centre, because this is big league coffee intake and it may have some long-term effects. So I think it's good that he's recognising there's an issue and wants to do something about it. But somebody who knows a lot more about addiction than I do should be giving him advice on this one.
Okay, thank you. That's for you, Scott. Good advice from Dr. Ross. Mona says, love your segment with Dr. Ross. I buy Tibetan magnesium. She said, I dilute the magnesium and use it on sore parts of my body. I think it's called transdermal. I suffer with pain behind my knees. I have bursitis in both shoulders and I get so much relief from this form of magnesium as it goes straight to the problem area. Question, can you use too much magnesium? Is it true that people with heart conditions should not use magnesium?
Not in the slightest. I give magnesium to all my cardiac patients because what magnesium does is modulate the cardiac rhythm and keep it nice and regular. And also magnesium is good for the muscles. It stops cramping, whether you swallow it or whether you rub it on certain areas. And Mona's getting enormous benefit from this. The only thing I would say, that at some stage it wouldn't hurt for her to have some blood magnesium levels just to make sure she's not developing a toxic dose. And here's the problem with all these things, Brent, is that what might work really well for one person doesn't work for the next person, because we're all slightly genetically different and we all respond to things in different ways. But there's certainly no cardiac issues with magnesium taken in reasonable doses. But as I said, just to be safe, the next time she's having some blood tests, get the GP to take off some magnesium levels. And if the magnesium levels are good, it means she's not getting a huge amount of absorption into the bloodstream. It's just being absorbed locally into the areas where she needs the magnesium to work.
Clint says, and maybe you can help me here, Clint says, what's the drug called, please, that Dr. Ross Walker was talking about regarding migraines on your show today? So I know we talked about it either last week or the week before. What's that drug, Ross?
It's called Ubrogepant, U-B-R-O-G-P-A-N-T. But I've been told that it's not actually freely available in Australia as yet. But there are a bunch of what we call Gepant or G-E-P-A-N-T drugs that are available for migraine. And also there's monoclonal antibodies that people can have injected once a month if they're getting really severe migraines. These can actually just markedly reduce the migraine sufferer. So if anyone's having a lot of migraines, there's a few general pieces of advice I give people about migraines. Number one, get your neck looked at, and don't anyone ever have neck manipulation, because you can actually get what's called vertebral artery dissection and have a stroke with neck manipulation. Neck mobilization, which is a much gentler procedure on the neck, can really help. And there's a group of clinics run by specialized physiotherapists who do this upper cervical mobilization, which is really good for migraines. So it's point number one, get your neck looked at. Point number two, and this might sound like if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, but as a cardiologist, there is a thing called a patent foramen ovale, which is a small hole in the heart, which one in four people have. So in utero, this foramen ovale is open because you get all your oxygen from the umbilical vessels, comes across the liver, up through the right side of the heart, and goes across the right atrium into the left atrium, all the oxygen is pumped into the body. Then you take your first breath, and the open flap closes, but in one in four people, there's still a bit of persistence. Now, it's shown that people will have a slight patent foramen ovale. Some of them do have a slight increase in migraine risk. So if your migraines are really bad, it probably doesn't hurt to have a cardiac echo to see if you've got one of these patent foramen ovales, because things can be done about that. Number three is there's a thing that we spoke about a few weeks ago called the MTHFR gene, which occurs in one in two people, very, very common genetic abnormality, and that special sort of folic acid I told you about can help with this. If you've got an abnormality in the MTHFR gene, a subset of people there do get bad migraines and do respond well to taking a high-quality multivitamin with this fourth-generation folic acid that helps the migraine. But again, once you've done all of those things, if the migraine's still driving you nuts, you go and see a specialist neurologist whose expertise is in migraine. And there are now all these new therapies, including the Gepants, including these these calcitonin receptor gene inhibitors, which are the monoclonal antibodies, which can have a profound effect on reducing the risk for migraine. But there's even some old-style drugs that have been around for migraine for years that are quite effective as well. And I'll just tell you a story. This is an anecdote, not a clinical trial. But one of my very dear friends who actually lives in Byron Bay, because as you know, Brent, Byron Bay is my spiritual home, and I go there quite often. But one of my good friends who lives there, a woman in her 70s, she was having problems with her blood pressure but also severe migraines. I gave her an old-style beta-blocker drug called metoprolol, fixed up her blood pressure but also got rid of her migraines as well.
Two for the price of one.
Absolutely.
Last week we talked about SOMAC. You mentioned that you could take Tarzan or Nizac. They were the two drugs that you mentioned.
Tarzac, Nizac, yep.
We have found out they're not available in Australia at the moment and haven't been for months.
That's not what I've heard. I've got plenty of patients who've had them. So I'm surprised about that because I've suggested this to my patients all the time, and they get them quite freely. So it's not true they haven't been available for months because many of my patients have been getting them. And there's another very similar drug called famotidine, famotidine, which works in the same way. So they're all H2 blockers. So instead of switching off acid production in the stomach, they just tone it down a bit. Famotidine or the nizatidine or the tizatidine, so Nizac, Tizac or famotidine, I'm not aware that they're not available. So I'm a bit surprised about that.
Well, the people that sent me emails, if you could do me a favour and send me where you are, I mean, where you live, because as you know, Ross, we go all over the place here on a weekend, across New South Wales, into southern Queensland, even to the Northern Territory. So if the people that sent me those emails saying they can't get those drugs and the chemists told them they haven't been available for a long time, if they could let me know where they are, that might be some information that I pass on to Dr. Ross.
Well, I'll check with my people, but I've prescribed these drugs as recently as last week, and I've had nothing back from my patients saying they couldn't get them.
All right, we'll follow up on that. One last question, mate, before we get stuck into some topics. It's sinus season. Genevieve wants to know how long you can take Claritine or Zyrtec for, in reference to, you know, it's that time of year and people are suffering from sinus, particularly with these nor'westerly winds that seem never to stop blowing.
Look, the reality is they're very safe drugs, and for most people you could take them all year if you wanted to. Just a few minor issues. Something like Zyrtec especially can promote a bit of weight gain if you take them for a long period of time. But certainly Zyrtec and Claritine and Telfast are very good to take away the allergic response to the pollens and all, as you say, the northwesterlies that are coming through. And they're very, very safe drugs otherwise. And this is the problem with any pharmacology. If you line up 100 people, give them any drug, as a doctor, 90% think I'm a genius and 10% want to throw it at me because there's about a 10% side effect rate with all drugs. And with the antihistamines, it's the same thing, but they're usually pretty safe, usually have minimal side effects. Some people are very sensitive to the sedating effects of Zyrtec. Some people get a better night's sleep with Zyrtec. Claritine and Telfast are non-sedating, so they don't tend to cause any issues at all. But in terms of taking them over the spring period, no problems whatsoever.
Let's do some topics. I see that you wrote a very interesting article this week, which was close to my heart, and the headline says, disagreeable people are found to be more prone to conspiracy theories. And, of course, with Uncle Donald and his election campaign in the States at the moment, we're having lots of conspiracy theories, are we not?
The study that I'm quoting from the University of Oregon has shown that people who have strong beliefs in conspiracy theories and the vehement anti-vaxxers, I'm not talking about somebody who's a bit concerned about being vaccinated because they might have had a vaccine-related problem from the COVID vaccines, but I'm talking about people who are really vehement in these departments. They, in this particular study, they looked for particular personality traits, and they found that people who scored high on their belief in conspiracy theories also scored high in what we call the dark tetrad. And the dark tetrad, the four features of this dark personality traits, are number one, Machiavellianism. Now, what that means is you're manipulative and cynical. Number two, you score high on psychopathy. You're impulsive and you're callous. Number three, narcissistic. What a shock. Vanity and self-obsession. Number four, sadism. You're cruel and you're abusive. So anyone who's listening to this who really believes in conspiracy theories, I want to write in and abuse that Walker guy and abuse that Brent guy for having Walker on the radio. It's exactly my point. You see, if you're silly enough to believe that the moon landing was fabricated, or that JFK was actually killed by the CIA, or the Princess Diana was killed by the royal family, or what the 9/11 was staged by the American government. If you're silly enough to believe these conspiracy theories, you're probably right high on one of these dark tetrad, or possibly even all of those. And I put it to anyone who's listening here, because the problem is, since the huge anti-vaccine lobby has risen since COVID, it's broken up families, friendships. It's really caused problems in the workplace. So I just ask you to say, if you know somebody who is a very strong believer in conspiracy theories, do they rate high on one of these four things? Are they manipulative, cynical, impulsive, callous? Are they vain and self-obsessed? Are they cruel and abusive people? I'm not saying everyone who believes in conspiracy theories has to have that, and I'm not saying people who don't believe in conspiracy theories have none of these features. I'm just saying they tend to have more of them if they believe in conspiracy theories. I just thought it was really interesting.
Yellow food dye can make living tissue transparent, and it could improve cancer treatment, blood draws, tattoo removal, all sorts of things. Now, these tests haven't been done on humans yet, but it's looking positive, isn't it, for future?
Absolutely. So this is my segment that I have on my show called The Future of Medicine, but I also have a segment called The Weird File, and I think it could be on a bit of both here. So some animals such as jellyfish, zebrafish, and glass frogs — I didn't know what a glass frog was — actually have see-through bodies. But most mammals, or really all mammals, are completely aren't transparent at all. And the thing was, if we did have transparent organs, we'd look pretty odd. But you could do much better diagnoses of what's going on in people's organs, looking at their liver, their spleen, their brain. I mean, that's the thing for a dermatologist. They actually can look at the skin. Whereas apart from ophthalmology, where you'd look into the eyes, ear, nose and throat, look into the ears and the mouth, when you get into the more deeper specialty — I'm not saying that ear, nose and throatless or dermatologists are superficial — but when you get into the deeper therapies where you're looking at deeper organs, like the heart, like the lungs, like the gastrointestinal tract, the brain, you need scanning to actually look at the organs, or even biopsies to see what's going on. Well, this particular food dye called FD&C Yellow 5, the name doesn't really matter, what it does is it when it's dissolved in water, it changes the concentration of how light travels through water. And they put it on mice, because mice have very thin skin. And they found they put it on a mouse belly, they could see through the liver and the spleen. And when they put it on mice skin, they could see the veins come up. So what they're saying is that for people who really struggle with bad veins, and a lot of people, like I've got one vein in my body that's very accessible if I need to have blood tests, but a lot of people have got veins that you could drive a bus through. But for a lot of doctors, it's very, very difficult, especially with little children. It's very difficult to find the deeper, smaller veins. So this would be wonderful to be able to just paint some of this dye on the skin and to be able to see the veins stand up. So we're talking about much, much easier to take blood and put drips in, early detection of skin cancers, it'd show up the cancer so much better, better light delivery therapy into deep tissues for photodynamic, photothermal therapies, and be much easier to take off tattoo removal with lasers. So interesting stuff. And possibly at some stage in the future, it'll just be standard of care to paint a bit of this dye on the skin.
But a warning, don't do it yet, because there are side effects. And this is what was said in the article: whatever you do, don't go out and get some yellow food dye and start rubbing it into your body.
Oh, no. These tests have to be done that it's safe, it's not going to cause any issues. But I'm just saying, it was an interesting thing to me that there could be a potential use for this in the future.
Three blood biomarkers could help predict heart attack and stroke risk in women. And I didn't realise, but cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in women globally.
But you see, mate, it's interesting. In the last month, in the New England Journal of Medicine, probably the greatest journal we have around the planet for medicine, and The Lancet, another really high-powered journal, the last month, two different studies have come out suggesting that people should be measuring this new blood test, Brent. It's a thing called lipoprotein little a. Now, have you ever heard me mention that before?
Regularly, yes.
Yes. Well, doctors have only shown any interest in this in the last couple of years because, you know why? Surprise, surprise. They're developing five drugs to lower lipoprotein little a. I've been measuring it in my patients for 30 years, and I've been using some vitamin supplementation and a thing called nicotinic acid, which does modulate lipoprotein little a. Now, it doesn't drop it anywhere not near like these new drugs, but this is I've been saying this is a major risk factor for heart disease for 30 years. So the New England Journal of Medicine have just come out and said that in a big study in women that's been going on since 1993, where they measured in 1993 their lipoprotein little a, their LDL cholesterol, and a thing called hs-CRP, which is a good non-specific indicator of inflammation, they found that measuring these three biomarkers in women was much more accurate than just looking at standard risk factors. And in fact, if your hs-CRP is up, people with the highest level of inflammation in their body are at 70% higher risk over a 30-year period of having heart attack, stroke, or cardiovascular death. LDL cholesterol, highest levels versus lowest levels, 36% increased risk, and LP little a, 33% increased risk. And if you've got unlucky enough to have all three biomarkers at the start of the study, you were 2.5 times higher risk for a major cardiac event and nearly 4 times higher risk for stroke over the 30-year period. So this is just new, important information, but to be frank with you, mate, I've been talking about the importance of measuring all of these things for years and years and years.
You have. You're right all along. No one ever questions that. I've got to let you go. That went quick this week, didn't it?
No, it certainly did. We'll talk next Saturday, mate.
We shall, mate. Yeah, enjoy the rest of your weekend, Ross.
Thanks, mate.
Bye.